Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. Today, I have a great guest on. In fact, it's the kind of guest that everybody wants to talk to. So I'm going to bring him on right away. His name is Daryl Sims. So, Daryl, welcome to the show.
It's wonderful to be here.
Now, we caught you off guard, but that's okay. Daryl, I want you to explain to my listeners a little bit about who Daryl is so that they kind of know a little bit about you, and then I have some questions to talk to you about, and then there's a lot of information I'm sure you'd like to give out to the listeners.
Certainly. I'm a licensed private investigator in the state of Texas, and I've been doing this research for 38 years. I spent approximately 2 years in the Central Intelligence Agency as working as a chief of security there for a particular installation, and working in the JOT program, that's the Junior Officer Trainees, which that simply means is the fancy word for people who are becoming spies in the Central Intelligence Agency go to training there. And I was part of the part and parcel to their training efforts there and providing security for them. But that, in a nutshell, is my background in terms of investigating. And I've also 3 years as a senior military police officer as well. So that is, in a nutshell, where I'm in terms of investigations.
Okay. So, but now let's talk about when you were a child and what happened to you and what prompted you to become an ET hunter.
Very good question. What caused me to ultimately come into this phenomena is two actual events. One is my own abduction experience when I was approximately 3.5, nearly 4 years old, where an entity came into my room. This was 1005 South K Street in Midland, Texas, in 1952. So back then, of course, nobody knew anything about aliens and abductions or anything like that in any sense of the word, certainly not like today. And as a little boy, I saw this entity leaving my room. What all that simply means is that I could not understand why the entity, why he was there. It was a bipedal being. It looked like he was pure white, had large black eyes, and he literally was leaving as I looked at him and thought to myself something rather interesting. I said, what? I thought in my head, what is that? And the reason that was stunning to me is because as soon as I thought it, he turned around. In other words, he was listening to my thinking. And as a result, I realized at that point, and I had no idea how that could be possible, but I realized that he could hear me thinking, and he turned around and looked at me, and of course, from his point of view, he was trying to figure out, I was supposed to be asleep. They just brought me back from my abduction. And they literally made a mistake. I'm not supposed to remember anything. And here I am sitting there looking at him, wondering what he's doing in my room. I'm not supposed to remember anything. And now I'm wide awake and I remember what's going on. So the main thing that about him that I thought was rather fascinating is that he didn't have any genitalia. He had no clothing on, he didn't have a belly button like I did as a little boy, and he didn't have any mammary glands. Now, so to me, this was stunning. Of course, as a kid, we don't understand what all that means. As an adult, and certainly after 38 years of investigations, it tells me that he doesn't breed, he doesn't make his own kind, and that he didn't get here like we do. In other words, he was either born, hatched, or cloned. Or manufactured. So that was the beginning of my experiences that threw me into this phenomena. I had about 10 events over a period of 13 years. At age 17, my events ended violently. And as far as I was concerned, I didn't want to know anything more about it. Now, the thing that really brought me into the phenomena, as you mentioned, is the fact that one day, out in the place where the Cash Landrum case happened, I live right down the street from where the event happened, my son was abducted at about 2:30 in the morning. And I realized something was wrong, got up, ran into the living room, and there he was. They had just brought him back. At that point, my wife looked at me and said, "What's going on?" And, of course, I had to come clean, and I'd never told her that anything about the UFO thing or abductions or anything. I never told anybody. And so that part of the event threw me into what I do now, and which is referred to as the alien hunter. I mean, basically, if you can tamper with me, and I could live with it. When you come after my children, it's a different story.
Okay, now, during the abductions, you don't remember what they did, but you remember coming back. Now, are any of the abductions that happened to you, Daryl, did you remember what they did with you, or did you not know?
Well, I remember some of the things that they did. And from some of the events that I've had, I had a partial memory of some of these events. As an example, in the first event there, the next morning I was looking down at the ground, and I noticed I was wearing my little shorts at about 4 years old, and I looked down and I could see this little scoop mark out of the middle of my shin. Now the scoop mark I have on my leg today is about 5/8 of an inch across. Now, when you're 4 years old and your legs look about like pencil stems, that's a pretty good sized mark on your leg. And I couldn't figure out where in the world the scab was. I mean, I didn't fall and hurt myself. So how did I get hurt? And as I looked at the area that had this big scoop out of it, big missing chunk of skin that had apparently been cauterized, it didn't make sense to me, because I mean, little kids, if they get hurt, they remember it. I mean, they pick at the scabs, they look at their sore and, you know, their injury and tell mommy and all that. There never was any injury. There never was any sore. So whatever happened there happened very quickly. And, I couldn't figure that out. And as I looked at it and I touched it and thought to myself, when did this happen? How could this happen? A weird, interesting thought came into my head, which was interesting because it wasn't my voice that was speaking, and it says, "You fell and hurt yourself." Now, what was amazing to me about that is I never speak to myself in second or third person. I mean, so the question is, who was doing the talking? And this to me was as I understand it now, it's a program that was running. In the event that I should ever figure anything out and inquire, is simply to forget it, to not remember. So that was what happened in the first event. The second main thing that I remember in the next event, which was 12 years old, 1960, in Alamogordo, New Mexico, is I remember the abduction account, and I was literally woke up. I thought it was my mother's voice. In fact, they mimicked my mother's voice perfectly. And she said, "Go outside," which made no sense because my mom and dad slept on the entire other side of the house. There's just no way you could have heard them. They'd had to yell at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning for me to hear it. And then she was talking normally, and it was really strange. So I did what she said. I walked outside. Well, as soon as I did, there was this bright light out there, much brighter than any star on the horizon. And like the movie Phenomenon, how it came toward him very quickly, and the next thing he knew, he was out cold. It was very similar to that. This thing got very bright very quickly, and I realized that point thing is coming toward me. Next thing I know, I'm woke up in a circular room on a table with my legs elevated about 11 degrees, and these entities, the same guy that picked me up all the other times is present, and his boss is present, and some other entities, and I can't figure out, well, what in the world, what's going on? Why are they doing this to me? What's going on? And as some of your audience probably knows, these entities can overhear your thoughts and can have access to your mind. It's like a computer. They access it. What a lot of people don't know is that in that modality, if you get out of the fear part of this phenomena, you can hear what they're saying too, what they're also communicating among each other, unless they shut you off. Well, they didn't shut me off, and as a result, I began to listen to what they're talking about, and they were talking about inserting this long needle-like device at my nasal passage, in which they did shortly thereafter. They jammed it in past my, in the nasal passage, in the nostril, and broke the bones of my nose, and it was screaming. It was very painful. And that was how I discovered the concept of an alien implant. Not because I'm particularly smart, but because I was simply there in the event.
Why do you think that the aliens implant us?
Well, interestingly enough, I wrote a book on it. In fact, there's two phases to the book. The first one, the first book that I wrote on the implant phenomenon is called Implants, the Evidence for Alien Implants. The thing that I discovered about the implant is a very complex answer, basically. But the bottom line is that the implants themselves, the objects, the physical objects we refer to as implants, are not nearly as important, even though we have about 20 of those objects that from our 32 surgeries thus far. Those objects, as amazing as they are not nearly as important as the invisible things that they do with us. But the implants themselves, basically the objects and what they purport to do with the other things that these entities are doing to us, seems to be connected to the possibility of monitoring and altering your neurotransmitters such as serotonin and dopamine. Anyone that does that to you, doctor or otherwise, basically is in control of your life. And they just literally, you there's not a lot of resistance there, so to speak.
I have another question for you. Now, I met you down at Roswell. Hi, everyone. Sorry. Process of asking Daryl Sims, my guest, about some more questions with the ET. And one of them I had said is that I had met you at Roswell this last time, actually just about 2 months ago. And at that time, you had some of those implants with you. And as you were speaking, because people were asking you questions and you were showing them, and you said that even some of the scientific, quote, people don't really want to know about these implants. Why would that be?
Well, one of the problems concerning acknowledging that alien implants exist is the fact that it's outside the realm of your understanding if you're a scientist. And now you're saying there's technology or not even technology, but something, some object exists, quote unquote, from outer space or wherever it's from, and they don't know anything about it. Well, scientists generally don't like to acknowledge that sort of information. They tend to like to think that they have quite a bit of information about a lot of things, and some things in specific very well. And this is this doesn't set well with some people. A second reason that some scientists have a real problem with that is because the information that has been presented as quote-unquote alien implants, like on TV and so on, some of these TV shows, some of the people presenting this, not us or any of our team, of course, simply didn't make a case for it and simply made statements, allegations, these are alien implants and so on, and these various people, scientists tested some of these objects and they turned out to be not alien at all. So that tends to make some scientists very skeptical that of the whole story of alien implants because they basically got a bad case to begin with and somebody didn't present the information correct and so on, and so it just makes the whole phenomena looked really, really bad.
Why do you think, Daryl, our government kind of tries to cover up all of the UFO sightings? I mean, there's tons of them all around the world, not just here, but all around the world. Why does our government versus some of the other governments, because some of the other governments, they talk about it, but not ours. Why does our government not want to talk about, you know, sightings, UFOs, aliens? Why don't they even want to admit to Roswell or Area 51?
Well, it's a complicated answer, but a question and a complicated set of answers, but I'll give it my best shot here. Some of the governments that have been more forthcoming have been places like Belgium and so on. Other places who claim they're releasing all kinds of information, such as Brazil is an example, The fact is that most good ufologists who really know their work know that a lot of that is a ruse. That in fact what you're getting released is just stuff that, you know, it's usually stuff that we know better than they do. And it's new in the sense of the word that new people who don't know the phenomena very well look at the stuff and say, see there, the military is releasing all kinds of stuff. These reports, many of them are old or useless and are nothing compared to what it is that they really have. So most of us are not fooled by that. Concerning the United States, that's a different story. Most of the stuff here, our government's not going to release for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is if the government came forward tomorrow, as an example, and said, okay, we're going to tell you all about alien abductions, about how these entities have been abducting people for probably the last 4,000 or 5,000 years on this planet and doing all these different things. And we just found out about it and got it confirmed after Roswell. However, we've been lying to you for the last 50-some years, and we want to just tell you that it's all okay now and you can just forgive us. A lot of people are going to line up to sue the United States government for ruining their lives. They're not going to be real happy with that kind of an answer. They're not going to be pleased at all. Some people don't mind and think that would be a great idea, but many abductees are going to line up to sue them. And just because of the fact that they lied all along and created just havoc for their lives as a result. But the second reason is the fact that all the people who lied and kept secrets from not only the United States public, but the world, and this stuff is so important that it's not a U.S. secret. The problem is this thing is a world secret. I mean, this is stuff that belongs to all of humanity. And people who are hiding this stuff from the rest of us, as far as we're concerned overall, basically are treasonous to all of humanity, not to just a country. But they're keeping it from everybody. Now, on the other hand, if I can speak on behalf of perhaps an intelligence community, here's an example. They may know some things that maybe you don't know. And maybe there are good reasons why they don't tell you. Now, I know most people don't want to hear that, and I don't like that idea myself, but what I'm telling you is that there has been an ongoing, for lack of a better term, silent war with this phenomena. And some of the encounters that the intelligence people, military, and others have had with these beings in different countries, and particularly Russia and the United States, has been violent. And not everybody thinks it's a great idea to let everybody know what's going on. It'd be better for them to fight it, so to speak, or do what they're going to do in private. I personally still don't like that idea, but there are those in the intelligence community who feel that's the best way to do it.
I heard this, Daryl, and I don't know how true it is, and maybe you can help me. I had heard probably, I don't know, 10 years ago that Russia had actually seen some sightings and picked up on something and made like the signals for them, or they carved whatever, you know, they could in the land so that the UFOs would think that it is some type of a UFO-based landing. And as they went to land, they shot them down. And then within a week or so after that, that entire base was destroyed. Now, do you know about that, or is that just a hearsay?
Well, to me, those type of stories are kind of useless because if you have a base that gets destroyed, everybody kind of knows about it. I mean, when hundreds or thousands of people turn up missing, there are hundreds and thousands of people that are connected to them. They're going to be screaming bloody murder all over the planet and all over the Internet. Where's all our relatives and so on and so on? And I don't see that happening. I mean, there's no big outcry of missing people, so to speak, in that regard. The fact is that there is, in my opinion, and based on the information I know, there is a threat, and there has been to humanity from these beings for some time. I don't think they're trying to take over the planet. I don't think it's a threat like that at all. I don't think that's their plan. Never has been. I think it's much more secretive than that, and in my opinion, more insidious. I don't think the idea of them coming here to eat us or barbecue us or save the planet or fix the ozone hole, none of those stories are true, because if that were true, they'd already done it. That would be the plan. And they don't seem to be here to eat us. They don't seem to be here to take over the planet. They don't seem to be interested in fixing the ozone hole or making anything better or anything else. That's not their plan, and that's obvious, because that's not what they've done for at least 5,000-6,000 years here. So if they've been surreptitious and secretive for several thousand years, and I can give you some quick examples, in every culture you'll find the UFO phenomena. Every culture. You'll find the flying ships called the Vimanas in Hinduism, in Sanskrit literature. In Islam, you will find the term the jinn, which is the word, you get the word genie, or the one that can appear and disappear, like abductions is an example. And then you have all these other terms in various cultures, the fairies, the gnomes, and all these different weird small creatures in various cultures around the world. You have even the Nordics, the taller human-type entities. Even among the American Indians, they were sometimes referred to as the Sisistas, the tall red-haired ones. Well, there just aren't very many red-haired Indians anywhere out there with beards in North America. However, there were those reports of those people and their craft, and especially in the Hopi tradition, which we and my buddy Ron Regeer study quite a bit, and he's much more adept at it than I. We can show you in their petroglyphs and in their markings on, and ancient markings, I mean, some of them thousands of years old, pictures of UFOs and their entities, and even abducting things in air, taking things from the ground up into the air to the craft, even in these petroglyphs. So my point is that this stuff has been around for a long time, and every culture has been told or led to believe whatever that culture would swallow. In Ireland, for instance, where I'm Irish and Native American and Irish both, in those cultures, we were led to believe, particularly with Irish, that there were fairies. And now the stories of fairies in Ireland are not like the ones in Aesop's fables. These guys are rough. And if you don't do right and they don't like you, they may not bring you back. They're not the fairies of Aesop's fables. They're different. And that's the real history behind it. My point is that in every culture, they have led us to believe they were someone else other than who they are. And I suspect whoever they are from who they were in the beginning. But the fact is we've been lied to and humored and everything else for the last 6,000 years in every culture. Now, obviously, they're different in every culture, obviously they can't be everybody in every culture the same thing. They're still whoever they are. They're still the alien or whoever they are originally. But they've found it convenient to conceal themselves and hide themselves in the various cultures by giving themselves names like fairies, gnomes, the djinn, and so on and so on. So the bottom line to me is simply this. If these entities are hiding and have been all this time, what makes us think that we're any smarter than all these other cultures for the last 6,000 years? We say, well, we're smart because we have aircraft, we have jets, we have all these equipment that can go in outer space, so therefore we're automatically smarter. Really? Well, if they were the djinn, and they were this, and they were all these different things, and now they're coming to us telling us they're aliens from another planet, if they've lied for 6,000 years to every culture, what makes any of us think that they've told us the truth this time? In other words, this is just an educated whopper for us to buy into, just like the other whoppers they told every other culture was appropriate for them. So to me, I think we've been hoodwinked again.
Many times over. How can somebody, in your opinion, know that they have been abducted? Is there any signs of any kind?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. If they go to our website on www.alienhunter.org, and email me, you can just click on Alien Hunter and it'll email me. You can do a couple of things there. First of all, both books are right there on the front, and the first book, Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Light, talks about how to discover your own abductions, how to find actual physical proof that your events have in fact been true or not. And once you either read that, or if you contact me directly from email, I will send them a form by email in which they can free. They can look at it and go through it and determine for themselves based on that questionnaire. Once they send it back to me, they can determine what they think, and I'll determine what I think based on their answers and so on. But that's a good help. But some of the telltale signs, for instance, I'll just give you a few of the symptomologies from many abductees, myself being one of them, is missing time. In other words, you go to a friend's house, let's say at 7 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, you knock on his door, and he's mad because you're late 3 hours, and you're looking at him like he's nuts. Because as far as you're concerned, it's still 7 o'clock. You look at your watch, and it says, oh, my gosh, I'm 3 hours late. But the question is, where were you for 3 hours? Your friend slams the door in your face, you drive off, and you're, like, confused. I don't get it. What happened to me? Well, that's called missing time. Somebody's already intervened and taken and induced amnesia on you, and as a result, you got missing time for 3 hours. So you have to figure out how to account for your 3 hours. Some of the symptomology are unusual cuts, scars, bruisings. In rare cases, implants. Now, and implants, let me tell your audience this, please. Implants are extremely rare. I look at hundreds of x-rays every year, and every one of those people that send me these x-rays absolutely believe they're implanted. And I assure you, in 99% of these cases, you're not. It's just, implants are extremely rare. The second thing is when abductees are experiencing these events, if you've actually had physical contact with an entity, and this is in my book on Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Light, you can take a black light, which will shine approximately 267 nanometers. That means it'll light up any fluorescence that may have been on you. Where would fluorescence come from? If an entity touched you and grabbed your arm, as an example, and led you down the hallway or whatever it is, wherever you were at, if he's touched you, and if you get a black light after you have had an event or a weird dream that doesn't make any sense to you, and you put a black light next to you, if he has actually physically touched you, it is highly likely that the markings of his touch will still be on you. He exudes a sweat-like material that is fluorescent in color. Now, one of the things you'll notice very quickly is you can't wash it off, you can't get it off in any way, shape, or form. The body will finally absorb it. But that's just some of the ways you can tell when physical contact has actually been made.
How, when you, let's go back with you, Daryl. The last time that you were abducted, you said it ended violently. Can you explain that a little bit to the listeners?
Yes, I can. It didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And this is kind of an interesting point, and many abductees fall into the same trap here. It never occurred to me, after 9 abductions prior to my last event, I never put any of them together. Is that weird or what? We're programmed not to remember, not to make associations. And those programs usually work real well on us. It never occurred to me that all those events, those strange things that happen in each one of those events, they're all connected. That this is an ongoing program. It's been going on in my life for over 13 years. It never, ever occurred to me that it's connected. I mean, it's kind of a duh feeling whenever you think about it. You look back and say, oh, my gosh, you couldn't put that together. No, it's not that you can't put it together. It's you're programmed not to. And those programs run very effectively. My next book, which is the one after the alien implant, the physical implants, is Invisible Implants, and it talks about how they do what they do and why it's effective and how you can prove yourself if it, in fact, has occurred to you as well. So the last event that I had, this last event made no sense to me whatsoever. It wasn't like any of the events before. So this one just absolutely stunned me because I was age 17, and this is really weird because my mom and dad's room is right next to mine. So, and my dad's a light sleeper. I guarantee if there was a cat that walked across that floor, my dad'd wake up. Somebody kicked the door in. They didn't knock. They didn't open the door. the door opens to the inside of the room. In other words, I wasn't sleepwalking and kicked my door out. The door opens from the inside. Somebody kicked the door from out in the hallway, broke the old-style lock on it, knocked it clean off into the floor. By the time the lock hit the floor, I was sitting up in the bed with eyes as big as saucers. I mean, wondering, what in the world? My mom and dad, my brothers, sister, no one ever woke up. I'm sitting up in bed, I mean, white as a sheet. And there were five entities that showed up. Two of them that captured me and took me. And then there were two other entities that were beside the last entity that finally showed up in the hallway. There was a great bright light in the hallway, which was interesting because the light was much brighter, and I mean much brighter, than anything we had in a lamp there in the hallway. I mean, none of that made sense to me. It was lighting up my room fairly well. It was so bright from the hallway. My parents never, I mean, this whole thing is insane. So, anyway, I was taken away and then brought back the next morning, several hours later. The interesting thing is the next morning, I mean, I'm sitting there just stunned because I'm remembering pieces of what's happened. And I still, again, you're programmed never to tell anybody. You're not supposed to. You can, but if you do, you feel like you're betraying someone. I mean, it's a great program they run. I never told my dad. My dad gets up in the morning, gets ready to go to work. He looks in my room. He notices the doorknob's off of the door, and he pushes the door open, and he sees the doorknob and the other stuff laying on the floor, and he looks at me and says, boy, sure, you're a little rough on your room here, boy. And I look at him and yeah. And, I mean, he didn't know what's happened. I don't know what's happened. And he goes off to work, and I just absolutely, you know, I'm just floored. That evening, that afternoon, late afternoon, the sun starts going down, and I get so phobic. I mean, a fear I have never felt before. I get my truck and I go to my girlfriend's house right down the street, and I figure of all the people in the world who will trust, I can trust and believe me and all of that, I'll tell her. Even though I didn't tell my own parents. So I sit down and tell her, I said, Rosie, I need for you to sit here and listen to me, and I'm going to tell you something. You're going to have a hard time believing it, but I swear to you every word of it's true. I started telling her what happened, and she looked at me like a calf looking at a new gate. Like I had lost it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I looked at her, I realized, this is a waste of time. So she takes me to a friend of mine. Said, I will not be comforted. Because, I mean, it's dark and I'm scared death are coming back. And these were not like a normal abduction at all. The five entities that showed up in that room are not in any UFO literature anywhere. But I assure you, they are connected to the UFO phenomena. And I'll explain that in a moment. The bottom line is we went to this friend of mine's house who is a psychologist, who's now a PhD psychologist in Australia. He looks at me, and he's studying UFOs and all kinds of other stuff, scientific anomalies with me. He's a school teacher, and he listens to my story. He's sitting there white as a sheet, hoping to God none of this stuff is true. And he said, Daryl, if aliens were really coming, they would land on the White House lawn and give a president a gift. And I said, I already saw the movie. Whatever it is we think about these entities, it's not going to happen anything like we think it's going to happen. And at that point, he looked at me and said, you've had this terrible, terrible dream. Well, that's exactly what my girlfriend had said. Now, to show you how profoundly their disbelief and my telling the truth affected me, this is a girl I was going to marry. I broke up with her. Didn't have anything to do with my friend after that. For years, a friend for years, and I just cut them off completely out of my life. I mean, if I sit there and tell you the absolute total truth, I mean, swear on a stack of Bibles, and you sit there and look at me like I made the whole thing up because you can't deal with it, you don't belong in my life as far as I'm concerned. So I cut both of them off, and I'd never married the girl and never had anything to do with the man again.
I would imagine, Daryl, that it is very hard when something has happened to you, and first of all, you can't really explain it to anybody when you're little because they're going to tell you the same thing, you had a bad dream, son. And then when you become 18 years old and you think it's people that you can trust and you find out that they're going to tell you the same story that they would have been told when you were a child, it's just a bad dream. I would imagine it's very hard to swallow that. I would think it's a very lonely trip that you made with your life from there on.
It really was, and thank you for those words of support. The fact is that for me, I am 100% truthful with the people that I know and with my friends, with my abductees and other people, and I demand the same thing of them. And for people who I am supposed to be associated with the rest of my life, a lady that's going to bear my children and so on, be my life companion, to sit there and look at me like I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, I'm old. I'm too young to really know what's going on, but I'm old enough to go to the Vietnam War the next year and volunteer for it. That doesn't make any sense. So if I'm old enough to make decisions to enter into war, but I'm not smart enough to figure out, you know, if the event was real or not, whether it's a dream or not, that doesn't work. So that threw me into indirect investigations from then. And then for years after that, I finally got into it when they got my son, of course, when I did marry my current wife of 38 years, and who knows about my events very well and understands these events, and especially since it's happened to our son and other members of my family, by the way. Since that's all true, it has been a wonderful relationship since then. And it's just been... it's just been horrific. The last event, the reason five entities showed up, I've never told the story or described those entities to anyone. And the reason I've not done that is because the minute I do, I promise you, there'll be messages all over the internet saying, oh, here's the entities I saw too, and they looked exactly like Daryl's. I got a better idea. Why don't you describe them for me, and I'll tell you if you're right or not. So this is a way that we have control over our events so that we know if people are making their stuff up or not. And I've only met 8 people so far my entire life who've met this one particular entity that was in charge of this group of 5 that showed up. Those 8 people that have seen or had contact with this entity ended up with their lives almost totally destroyed. One of them was my own former daughter-in-law. She ended up with grand mal epilepsy after her encounter. And the few other people I've seen, and I'll give you one quick example. A man came to me, walked around my table for 3 days out in Los Angeles at a conference I was speaking at. And finally, he was a tall black man, about 6'6". And he never would talk to me, never would come by. He just walked way around me. On the third day, when I was loading everything up, getting ready to leave to fly out, he walked up to me and said, Mr. Sims? And I said, yes, sir. I want to ask you a question. I want to draw something. I want you to tell me if you've ever seen this. And I said, yes, sir. I handed him a pen. He started drawing the picture, and my hair nearly stood up. I mean, it was the same entity that I'm talking about. It's not in any literature. Nobody's going to guess it. You can't. You're never going to guess it. If you'd have to actually have seen it. And you'll be traumatized as a result of it. Anyway, I took the pen out of his hand and finished the drawing to let him know I knew what he was talking about. All he said was, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And he said that again and ran away. The entity, what I'm trying to say to the UFO community out there is that the idea that there are, quote-unquote, several races of aliens that have come to Earth to talk to us and to communicate in their way and try to help us out. I've got news for you. You're not even close. First of all, they're not here to help you save the planet, fix the ozone, or anything else. And second, is there likely not 7 races or 8 or however many races of aliens out there you think there are. And third, they're probably not from any planet. We've got, I did a presentation 2 nights ago where I showed some crafts. Some on film, NASA film, and some in photographs, and some taken privately in pictures that were in craft that were in outer space. The crafts range from 11 miles to several hundred miles across. My point is, if you have a craft that big, where's your planet? it's not likely that individuals that have craft as big as a small moon or you know, hundreds of times the size of anything that we know of even aircraft carriers, hundreds of times that size, it's not likely they have a planet anywhere. That's probably their floating hotel, so to speak. And the question is, why are they out there and what are they doing? These are questions they're never going to tell you. They're never going to answer. And they're going to stay far enough away, it's going to be rare for you to ever see them. But the fact is, we do have photography. We do have some actual film footage. And if some of the people out there are interested in this, I'll be glad to forward it to them on email. They can just go to alienhunter.org, click on Alien Hunter, and it'll email me and ask me for the photos or information. I'll be glad to send it to you. It's free of charge.
It'd be great. You might want to send them to the station so maybe they can put them up a little bit later, or send them to me and I'll see if I can put them up. That'd be fun. I do have another question for Daryl. Why do you think they chose you to come to?
I don't think it had anything to do with being special, unique, or anything like that. I don't have a particular deodorant they like or anything like that. I think it has to do with a genetic program that's ongoing. If our information is correct, and it's nothing I can prove at this point, it's certainly stuff we can point to by anecdotal evidence. In my family lineage alone, I suspect that they have been monitoring it for at least since the 12th century. Now, that's just what I think. I can't prove that. But we do have indicators that hint at that. The fact is, they don't care about me. They don't care about you. They don't care. But when they do have someone in a lineage, for instance, like in my family lineage, there are several people that picked up in our immediate family. Most of the time, they'll pick up only one or two people in your family lineage. They may skip a generation or two. But if you talk to most of the people in your current family, if you're an abductee, I guarantee you, in almost every case, you're going to find several other abductees in your immediate family, aunts, uncles, and so on. You need to get away from everybody when you ask them the big question, like if they ever seen this or that, or had any, just start describing your experiences. And if you're alone with them, you watch their physiology, and you'll see that they get real nervous and real upset when you start talking about this, and then most of the time, they'll come clean and tell you, yes, that happened when I was a little boy. This first started happening, and it seemed to quit some time ago, and I don't know why it happened, and so on. But the point is, they're monitoring your lineage, and it's not you per se. The best way to answer that whole question for me is in my book, describe abductees and contactees, and the contactee is a person who's had these experiences, but in my opinion, bought the screen memory that these entities left on their brain as a true story, which wasn't. And one of the whoppers they tell people is, we're here to save your planet, fix the ozone hole, and do all these wonderful things for you, which none of which is true, and they've never done any of that. Those people are brainwashed, in my opinion, with alien Stockholm syndrome, and simply bought into the whopper, just like many other peoples have all through history. Then there's another group of people called abductees. Abductees, people like myself, remember pieces or parts or some of them in all of their event, and they didn't like it because it's abduction. It's a violation of any kind of rights. And sometimes you get these clowns out there and say, well, they're aliens, they're superior to us, they have the right to do it. Well, really? So if we're superior to another race, let's say, on Earth, or think that we are, we can just go abduct them. It's amazing that the morals don't apply to us. The morals apply to us, but they don't to any of these alien entities. I don't buy that at all. But the point is, an abductee doesn't agree with the program. And in my book, I outline that honeybees, which I call contactees, are simply the people who are so docile that they're basically making honey for the alien, so to speak, as a metaphor. In other words, they're working for the program and don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that I refer to others as of us, the 45% of the people that are taken in these abduction events are Native American, Indian, Irish, and Celtic. 45%. I call those the killer bees. That means we're the abductees. We're not gonna give in, we're not gonna let go, we're not gonna stop, and you're gonna wish you hadn't done the abduction if we ever catch you. So there's these two distinct mentalities out there, and I don't belittle either one or bless one over the other. It's just the way that it is, and that's just, you know, and I don't have any, I have no interest in trying to convince someone not to be a contactee and to be an abductee. I don't care. It's that's a person's choice.
Okay, Joe, do me a favor, because I want to get both your book names out, your website out, and again, how people get a hold of you. So give that out to the listeners, and then I got
most certainly. The website is alienhunter.org, and it's just that simple. Type it in, it'll pull me up. And right on the very front page, as you open alienhunter.org, there both my books are. You can click on the first one, which is Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Light. That shows you how to find evidence and how to even find the alien, and how scientists are using it currently. Even the intelligence community is using infrared and ultraviolet to see the alien presence. And the second book you'll see right next to it is called The Implants, Evidence of Alien Implants. That is, it's actually one, the first book of two dealing with alien implants. This first one deals with the physical objects themselves, and what you will see on the front page of that one is a lifesaver-sized object inside one of my abductees' head, inside the brain. Later, this implant moves to the other side of the brain. It was moved to another side of the brain, and later they removed it completely. Fortunately, we have the x-rays of it, so we have the whole history of it cataloged medically. But those are the two books, and that's the website.
Okay, now you also have a team of people that work with you. Why do you have that?
The reason we have assembled a team of people, scientists, doctors, and others, and the reason I did this is because many of these people have tremendously valuable skills. Some of them are ex-intelligence, some of them are DSP satellite specialists, and so on. But they don't know what I know about the alien, and they don't know how to do a lot of things I do in the investigative area. But they have skills and powers that I don't have. For instance, in the medical field, we have two cardiovascular surgeons, as an example, and other doctors. And the point is that these people are extremely useful, but they don't know how to determine certain things about this phenomena. So that's where I come in. I find the evidence and I locate the data and turn it over to these various people at their levels, and we process everything from there. We're doing some DNA testing now that is going to be absolutely outstanding and remarkable, and nothing I can discuss right now, but we hope this year that that'll be out in the open, and it's just going to stun people in the UFO field.
Which is kind of neat. Now, you do lectures and events. Do you have any coming up soon?
Yes, I've got a conference up in, and again, if anybody's interested, we'll have it up on the website soon. My webmaster is just coming back from vacation, so it'll be up very quickly. But we have conferences. One main conference will be on the last of October, 29th and 30th, I think, is the Sutherland's Conference. And this one's going to be in Wisconsin. And, again, we'll have it up on the website pretty soon. Or, again, if people in that area want to know about it, all you got to do is email me, and I'll be glad to send you that information, the entire flyer. For the Sutherland's Conference.
Is there any coming up in September?
The only ones that I'm speaking at right now are ones in Houston, and these are monthly, and they're ones that I host most of the time. We started the Houston UFO Network back up into existence again. It's been out of existence for several years because of a storm that destroyed the building that we were in. And they never started it back up, so I went out and started back up myself 2 months ago. So we do have events that that are in Houston that we speak at once. Again, if the people want to know, they email me, and I'll be glad to give them the information, or put them on our mailing list so they can get our flyer every month and find, or sometimes several a month, what's going on, the latest in the medical and scientific realm. We also have an online support group for people who are abductees and contactees. And in that support group, we don't belittle anyone for being an abductee or a contactee. It's a support group. It's for the support of these people and not for tearing down anybody's beliefs.
which is real important. Again, now, we're almost out of time, so could you give out your website again and the name of your two books?
My website is alienhunter.org, and the name of the first book is Alien Hunter, Evidence and Light. That's the first book you should read because they go hand in hand. The second book is Alien Implants. It's Implants, the Evidence for Alien Implants by Daryl Sims.
Okay, and when people come to you, it's kept actually very confidential unless they tell you that they don't care. Is that true?
Yes, most of the people are extremely confidential. They most of them don't want to talk, although we had an abductee two nights ago describe his events right after our meeting at UFON. He got abducted on the way home, him and his friend, and he got up and told the whole story. It was rather amazing. And he showed evidence and cuts and bruises and all kinds of things as a result of the event. But most of these people want their anonymity. Many of them literally don't want to be known, but they will share their information if we will keep them private.
Okay. And my other question, has the government, and it's up to you if you want to answer this or not, has the government ever approached you, Daryl, and tried to get you to stay quiet?
The best way I can answer that is I was on a radio program several years ago, and I had as a webmaster at the time, he was a cryptologist in the intelligence communities, retired. So that's why I wanted him as my webmaster. He isn't with us anymore, but he was then. And on this radio station, I decided to throw out some buzzwords that only people in the intelligence community would know. And so I just dropped them. Of course, nobody knew any. They didn't know what I was saying. I just interspersed it with the conversation so the only people who were witting would understand that. Long story short is my webmaster calls the next morning screaming over the phone. He said, "What the hell do you think you're doing?" And he's cussing. And I said, "Well, what is the problem with you?" And I told him what I did, and he said, "We got 250 hits on our website last night from NSA, CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency." He just listed all of them. He said two of the NSA computers are sitting in the White House. The fact is, the last part I'll tell you is that a lady approached me years ago, and two doctors approached me with two of my doctors, and she said the Clintons would like to look at your material. I said, "You're kidding." And she was a personal friend, she claimed, of Hillary Clinton. And I sent my two videos on implants and my video Best Evidence to her, to Hillary and Bill, in the White House when they were president. And they sent back a message that they really enjoyed the information. They were amazed at what we had done. So, but nobody's tried to shut me down, although we definitely have had some of our abductees informed not to give me any more information.
That's what I thought. Daryl, our time is actually up. It has been a pleasure talking with you, and I'm sure that all listeners enjoyed all the things you had to say. So, you know, thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week. Take care, and we'll talk later. Bye now.